The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It's great to be here with you today. It is a delight to be back and to be able to spend my afternoons with you. We got a lot coming up today. In fact, if you're married, I got a great segment I can't wait to get into a little bit later. And if you wear a wedding ring, I know a lot of married couples sometimes don't wear wedding rings. Some guys don't based on their job. These are sources of great spiritual protection. Just read a fascinating article on the wedding ring being a sacramental. So we'll talk about that and a whole lot more. But right now, lots going on in the world. I'm sitting here in studio, and I just heard my colleague here, John Harper, report on what's happening literally around the world. And he joins me once again. John, good afternoon.
True.
You know, John, I was just listening to your newscast. It's something you and I have not talked about yet, but I'm really curious about. Emmanuel Macron, I mean, France has been, they've been up, the citizens of that country have been up in arms ever since he has raised the retirement age, and he only raised it, I think, by 2 years. What's going on there? I just heard part of your audio.
Yeah, you know, again, it's just the cultural thing where, you know, we think nothing of working till we're 70, 80, and there it is such a big milestone in your life to get to 62 and then just simply retire and enjoy the good life in France, that even, you know, pushing it a little bit higher has just brought tens of thousands into the streets and essentially shut down Paris today.
Yeah, I saw, you know, this has been a developing story for weeks now. And I remember trash, you know, piles gathering, I mean, all sorts of protests taking place. We'll see how that ultimately gets resolved. But ultimately, like, well, the situation holds true here and even in our own country. You know, there may come a time where they raise the minimum age for Social Security here in mm-hmm. the States. If you don't have the money to fund it, you're going to have to find a way to resolve that. So we'll see how that unfolds. Speaking of the States, though, John, here, there are a couple new candidates for the office of president, two of them for the Republican Party, the third for the People's Party. But Mike Pence has actually filed his papers. So has the former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, who's formally announced that he's going to run for the highest office in line. I don't know what kind of chance that Christie has, or maybe even Pence. Some people have never even heard of the People's Party. And if you haven't, you're not alone. It's a very small third party. Cornel West, he's announced he's going to run as its candidate. And he's a very well-known liberal and radical philosopher. He's been on the air with me in the past. I had him and Professor Robert George join me one day for just a great exchange. And he holds views that are nearly diametrically opposed. And he's a, as I said, a good friend of Professor George. But someone posted that this West story on Facebook, and Professor George says that he would not, they wanted it to be his running mate. And George says he wouldn't endorse him because it would turn off West's progressive base. Hmm. What's going on with these candidates? We have some, Taylor Marshall's another guy who's kind of an internet name and a professor. He threw his name in the ring. And of course, we've got others like Scott and Haley and others that are already, you know, already in the race. How big do you see it getting? What do we know about these new people who are now dipping their toe in the water?
Well, the new people who, especially in the third party, it's interesting. There's a map that's going around today, and I suppose it's easier to win the lottery than it would be the Electoral College. But those Cornel West's people put out a map showing the path to 274 electoral votes in the White House coming up in 2024. Wow. And it's like every state except a few of the Rust Belt states in California would just go to the Progressive Party. Probably not going to happen. It'll be interesting to see what happens with Mike Pence. And of course, overall, with the Republican field, the larger it is, the better it is for Donald Trump, who has just got a commanding lead right now. And it's interesting that Pence and Trump both share that evangelical base. Yeah. So I don't think that base will shift that much over to Mike Pence, but it will be interesting to see what happens with, you know, the president's still in more legal jeopardy, perhaps something coming down in Washington, D.C. this week. And then there's the case in Georgia and then other things that are happening around the country. We'll see.
It's just beginning. You know, we're still months and months away, boys. This will dominate the news for sure. But we're in the beginning stages of it. We'll see what happens. You know, you are a big radio guy. You and I often talk about it off air, just about the future of AM radio in this mm-hmm. country, how important AM is just in terms of national emergency. And, of course, a lot of relevant radios, you know, a lot of their stations are AM. We're heard over FMs, right. Of course, digital platforms as well. But there was a hearing on Capitol Hill today in a House subcommittee about a bill requiring automakers to have AM radios in their cars. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago before I went away. And we talked about how important this was that people call their elected officials. What's happening on Capitol Hill? Has there been any news about the future of AM radio?
There is no real news except that Ford changed its mind and will continue to put AM radio in its automobiles as well. That's an issue of interference in an electric vehicle, in a regular vehicle, and it's just a matter of putting some filters. I'm not a mechanic, but you just put some filters under the hood and you'll be able to eliminate a lot of the electrical noise, the buzz, the static you get. Now, a lot of that over the years, though, is not radio's problem, but it has just gone unregulated by the Federal Communications Commission with 5G cellular computers, right, traffic lights, you know, just the general infrastructure creates electrical buzz. So that's always going to be there. Let me play a little clip here. Sure. This is Representative Jay Obernolt. He's a Republican of California, 23rd District, Apple Valley, just north of Los Angeles, speaking with a very articulate man and a very good operator. His name is Jerry Chapman, who owns a number of small market radio stations in eastern Indiana and western Ohio.
As technology changes, as the way cars are equipped is changing, why should our method of delivery for this emergency information not change with it?
Congressman, thank you. I think it's a fair question. We've evolved the FEMA mechanisms from 50 years ago to our current form of alerts. It is important that we recognize how to evolve things, but at the same time, we can't stop and make a hard no and say that we're no longer going to access a significant portion of the population, which this would do right now. It's important to look at innovation, but we don't have a ready fix to do at this point in time with the removal of AM from the EAS system.
82 right? million people listen to AM radio every single day. Wow. And again, Drew, like everything else, follow the money. When you look at the dashboard, satellite radio pays the auto manufacturers. Apple pays the auto manufacturers for apps that show up on the dashboard. Yep. What's free? AM and FM radio. Yep. So the car industry wants to, you know, maybe at some point in time ask us for some money. So that's why that email that went out to our listeners all across the country and around the world about AM radio and getting in touch with your congresspeople is critical and obviously keeping relevant radio on the air. How many sources of AM radio? How many sources on radio, yep, period? Can you hear the daily mass? Can you speak to a priest? Right. It's right here. Got to keep that
pray
going.
Pray the chaplet. Pray the rosary. I mean, it's
exactly.
Relevant is having a profound impact. And we talk about this. We see it really during our pledge drives in terms of the lives that are being impacted, the misconceptions that are being cleared, the truth that's being taught, the catechesis, the teachings of our faith that are being imparted. I mean, there's nothing like it on the air. But, you know, this is, I think you're right. I think it's a monetary issue. I've not done the show on it. I've been planning to do a program for those who are listening who may not know what's coming. I think you're plugged into this. Microtransactions. You know, I know that I think certain manufacturers overseas are now doing this with the BMW or some other vehicles where, you know, you want heated seats, you're going to pay a certain amount of money per month to have that feature. It's all controlled, you know, with software. You want special high beams, you want this special feature. It becomes these microtransactions that add, yeah, up. Well, what's $2.50 a month, right?
Or it's like, well, Netflix. It's like, yeah, exactly. What's $7? What's $11? And then it adds up. And then all of a sudden, $250 is, yeah, going out of your pocket every single month for things you don't use.
I'd hate to see AM go away. I mean, it's such a great platform. Some argue it, you know, was an attempt to silence a conservative voice. A lot of religious radio is on AM. Sports tend to be on AM a lot, but I think you're right. I think you follow the money and you'll see
follow
where this
money
is coming from. Hollywood, speaking of money, there's a writer strike still going on, and now the Screen Actors Guild may go on strike, and the Directors Guild, I think they've reached a contract.
They have
with
an
the
agreement.
Studios. They have an,
yeah,
agreement now, right? So what's going on in Hollywood? How's that going to affect everyone?
Writer strike, there's really an impasse there because, again, we're talking about digital platforms and how the writers get paid on those digital platforms through which the studios and major program distributors get their content out to viewers. And now the same thing for performers as well. And that includes a lot of people. Screen Actors Guild, SAG, S-A-G, and AFTRA, the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists. That affects a lot of people. So, you know, maybe even voices on the radio, your local newscasters, if the TV station is a union shop, they may disappear, wow, in this big strike.
Be interesting to see how long that will go on if it indeed happens.
This is probably not the best economy for anybody where you want to go on strike, you know?
I know. I have a buddy who is, I think he's an auto worker. He's in some union. I forget what he was saying, but said, you know, their contracts are coming up soon. And they,
UAW.
Yeah, they got enough money to go on strike if they have to. And I'm thinking, that'd be terrible. This is a rough economy, you know, period right now. I hope it gets better. Speaking of the economics, people are concerned about gas prices, right? Mm-hmm. Especially now that Saudi Arabia has announced they're going to be cutting back on production by, I'd heard, 1 million barrels a day. And I'm just thinking, what's that going to do? Already, I look at how high the cost of gas is in the state that I am in right now. And I know it varies around the nation, but what will cutting 1 million barrels a day do? Because here in our own country, you know, the president has really throttled back on our own supply.
They're saying it's not going to affect gas
prices
until later summer. And I'm scratching my head on that, as you're probably too, because we've seen instantly when Saudi Arabia says we're going to cut 1 million barrels a day, you drive down the street to your gas station, you just say, hey, wait a minute, 15 cents a gallon more? It's the same gas in the ground. Yeah. What are you doing? This is really kind of one of those wait and see type things, because I guess the Saudis are not getting along with the Russians, and that had a price that had an impact on the energy prices, of course, around the world, and they may pull back on that. So that may benefit us. We'll see.
No kidding. Speaking of the Saudis, and I want to talk to you about the golf for a moment, if we can. Yeah. The PGA has merged with the LIV Golf Tour, the PGA Tour, I should say. Fill us in. What's the big deal there? What's happening? Why did they decide to do this? I know a lot of players were going for big bucks to the other tour. What happened? I have not been following this that closely, but for the two of them to merge, there must have been some very interesting dynamics.
You know, if you live in a big city, if you live in New York, Chicago, or Los Angeles, and other cities as well, you've probably seen golf show up on KTLA or WGN or WPIX, because the company that owns those stations is partners with LIV Golf, funded by the Saudi Arabian government. And they wrote great big checks for a lot of the big names to come over from the PGA Tour. And that caused a lot of consternation with just the golfing public, because Saudi Arabia was behind it. And even if you're Saudi Arabia, you find that running professional golf and paying people tens of millions of dollars is a pretty costly proposition, especially when you look at some of the crowds there. When I've watched a couple of those tournaments on television, and there's probably more people at your average miniature golf course. I think they just ran out of money and they went to the PGA and just said, why don't we just put everything back together again under one umbrella?
I go golfing with one of our producers here, a guy named Patrick Alock, and he just sent me a text. He's listening to our conversation. He says, I'm not going to watch the PGA Tour anymore, only the majors. So we'll see how it all falls out. I only got a moment or two left, John. The Pope has returned from the hospital. I didn't know that. Is this a routine
test? Okay, they said routine tests. It was 2 months ago that he was in there for 3 days. The bronchitis, they gave him antibiotics, got him back on his feet. Just routine tests. He will do the general weekly audience tomorrow. And Ashley Nerona will be on Morning Air to tell you all about what he said.
That'd be awesome. And the other thing, too, and I know you reported on this at the top of the hour, there is a dam that burst in the Ukraine.
Yes.
And not burst. It was taken out. Some say the Russians took it out. Russians saying the Ukrainians did. I don't know all the details of it, but my concern is there's a nuclear reactor that is often cooled by the water from this source. What's happening and who is at fault here?
Well, Vladimir Zelensky said it's clearly the Russians, based on just some early intelligence. And, why would the Ukrainians, why would the Ukrainians break up flood 16,000 people out of their homes and put that nuclear reactor in jeopardy, which is true because that water does cool the reactor there. So that's it. And here's one of the residents. This is what is really happening on the ground.
Of course, it's Russians. They were the only ones who had the dam under their control. Until they retreated to the left bank. And since they retreated, the Ukrainians couldn't have had any access to that place.
Because big picture is this is part of the Ukrainian counteroffensive, and they are now pushing Russians back into their country.
Well, John, always good to talk with you. I wish we had a lot more time today. Of course, the 79th anniversary of D-Day, right?
Yep.
Most decisive battle on the European front of the Second World War. So remember those souls who lost their lives there. But I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful to have you here. We'll catch up again a little later and listen to your newscast in just a few moments. All right.
Thanks, Drew.
You got it. That's John Harper giving us an update on the latest breaking news around the country and around the world. I've been talking a lot about the LA Dodgers, and we all have, haven't we? This has been a story that has gotten a lot of traction. They're scheduled to honor a group that mock and blaspheme the Catholic Church, and of course our Lady and our Lord. You know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence are they're to be given a community service award. Does that make sense? What community service, right? Community service award by the Dodgers. Nobody seems to have a clue as to what kind of community service they're doing. I don't know. The group mocks the church. It is especially nuns. By the way, they, you know, these men get up, and they put this makeup and they put a dress on. They try to look like a religious, which is really an offense. They also do performances where they mock, where they blaspheme the most sacred objects of our faith. And they do it on really the most sacred days of our faith. This to me is demonic. It really is. It's evil. It's a direct attack on all that is pure and good and holy. And the fact that the Dodgers are bestowing an award on that group on, of all days, the Solemnity of the Sacred Heart is disgraceful. I was driving to Mass early this morning. I was listening to Morning Air, and John had a great guest on talking about the Sacred Heart. And they talked about that devotion. The Lord talked about how his heart was wounded, how he was offended by this great gift of love he gives us and how it's often rejected. And look how we're blaspheming and mocking him today. The Archbishop of San Francisco, Salvatore Corleone, he wrote a column for the Wall Street Journal talking about the Dodgers and the so-called sisters, as well as the Marin County DA downgrading these charges against vandals who severely damaged the statue of Junipero Serra on private property. Let me share just a quick little bit of audio with you, Dr. Bildani, who is standing by. I want to get him into the conversation as well. But I don't know if you remember when Archbishop Corleone did a special exorcism on the grounds where that statue was defaced, toppled over. You might be impressed to hear what he had to say.
We are here at the site where the statue of Father Serra stood in Golden Gate Park that was blasphemously torn down. An act of sacrilege occurred here. That is an act of the evil one. Evil has made itself present here. So we have gathered together to pray to God and to pray, ask the saints for their intercession, above all our Blessed Mother, in an act of reparation, asking God's mercy upon us, upon our whole city, that we might turn our hearts back to Him. We came together to pray the rosary as Our Lady asks us, and then to offer the prayer of exorcism, the St. Michael prayer. Because evil is present here, this is the activity of the evil one, who wants to bring down the church, who wants to bring down all Christian believers. So we offer that prayer and bless this ground with holy water so that God might purify it, sanctify it, and that we in turn might be sanctified.
That's His Excellency, Archbishop Corleone. And I am joined right now by Dr. William Donahue, President and CEO of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. This is a great group. They've been on the front lines for as long as I've been broadcasting here, defending our Catholic faith and really our reputation. And you can check them out at CatholicLeague.org. They do incredible work. And Dr. Donahue, it's such a great honor to have you back. Good afternoon.
Oh, thank you so much, Drew. A pleasure to be with you.
You know, I was reading what the Archbishop was saying. Let me share a quote with you. I want your take on this. He says, history teaches that when we don't treat religiously or racially motivated crime seriously, we're going to see more and worse aggression. Transgender activists on social media have threatened heinous violence against Christian transphobes who don't subscribe to their ideology. He says faithful Catholics would do well to warn their political leaders from becoming modern day know-nothings. So the Archbishop talked about the know-nothings. You want to bring us back? It's a part of American history, and maybe expand a little bit on what he's saying.
Well, I totally agree with him, and he's a breath of fresh air. He's one of the few bishops in the country who is speaking up about these issues. And quite frankly, the difference between the LGBT radicals, I emphasize the radicals, and those promoting this assault on Catholics, particularly nuns, with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, Major League Baseball standing behind the Dodgers. The only difference between them and the Ku Klux Klan is that the Klan is violent. Yep. But to Corleone's point, when you have groups which are in every way anti-Catholic as much as the Klan, remember, it was Catholics and Jews who they were out against, and blacks, of course, initially going back to the time of the Civil War. But quite frankly, if you aid and abet in a nonviolent way anti-Catholic bigotry, you are then actually greasing the slopes for those to act in a more violent fashion, such as the thugs who attacked the statue of Junipero Serra. So we're in very dangerous times. I'm very happy that when we learned here at the Catholic League in mid-May about what the Dodgers were planning, I didn't go after the Dodgers. I went to the top. I went to Rob Manfred. It was on May the 16th. It was just a few weeks ago on a Tuesday. And we have tens of thousands of people on our email list, and we give the email of the person who's offended us, and they jump in, and they did, by the boatload. The very next day, MLB says there'll be no Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence invited. They disinvited them. The Dodgers did it, but it came from the MLB on this, because the MLB was standing behind it initially. But I said to my staff, I said, look, before we raise the flag in victory, you've got to be careful. I've been doing this job for 30 years, and if you give me time, or if you give the other side time, they might have a time. They might have the time to reverse things. And of course, LA being a very gay-friendly area, I said I wouldn't be surprised yet if the pushback will begin over the weekend. Sure enough, I was right. So we come into work on Monday the 22nd, and I learned as I'm getting dressed in the morning, the Catholic League thought it had won on this, but now they've been reinvited. I said, okay, what I'm going to do now is personally go through our big file that we've collected for decades on the sisters, pulling out the most egregious examples. I worked all day on that, and we released a report, a detailed report. We're the only organization in the country to do anything like this, and I'm very happy the Heritage Foundation and others have been citing it, because it lays it out in detailed analysis, all the specifics, the dates, and what when they were involved, going back to 1979, some of the more egregious examples. So we're not dealing here with burlesque. We're not dealing here with some guys making some Mel Brooks kind of fun. Right. This is a vicious, vile, anti-Catholic group, and it astonishes me that in this day and age that they're actually going to go ahead with this when in 1995, as I released yesterday, the Giants apologized to me when they invited them to a fundraiser on AIDS. Our country has changed in this regard, not for the better.
Well, I know anti-Catholicism has been present in our country since its beginning, but there's so much hate out there today. And you know, this is the last acceptable prejudice in our country is to be anti-Christian. Susanna, who's listening in Hawthorne, California, she's a citizen of the Los Angeles area, doctor, did something online. I'll bring her into the conversation. She just called in, wants to share something with you. Hi, Susanna.
Hi. When I received the invitation for the walk from the cathedral to Dodger Stadium, I posted it on Facebook, hoping that people, good people, moral people, whether they're Catholic or not, would see the invitation and want to join us on the 16th. I got 50 responses from people on Facebook, all of them hateful, hateful, hateful. I could not believe it. The good people of California are afraid to stand up. The priests and the leaders of our church are not standing up. At this time, very few.
Susanna, thank you. I'm going to let the doctor respond. I know Bishop Strickland has written about how we should stand up against this wokeism. We just talked a little bit about His Excellency Archbishop Cordeleone. Dr. Donahue, your thought on that? She makes a post. Every response she gets back, 50 of them, all hateful towards this.
You know, well, that's on Facebook, and the kind of people who live on social media tend to be on the left. We know that from previous studies. So while she has every right to be disturbed, I'm not as pessimistic, perhaps, as Suzanne is. And let's give some credit to Archbishop Gomez, who has spoken up about this issue. He's certainly come out in favor, as did Archbishop Corleone in San Francisco, of the Catholic League's campaign to deal with this. But, you know, there is a time when you can't have everything on the backs of the clergy. The reason why the Catholic League was founded 50 years ago in 1973 is because there should be a role for the lay Catholics. And we're asking lay Catholics, we've written now to hundreds and hundreds of organizations in the L.A. area and more to come. We have a radio ad, the first organization in the country to launch an ad campaign. Others have promised it. We delivered. It's on KABC. Today through the rest of the week, 25, 30-second ads asking people not to go to the game. I'm not asking to boycott all Dodger games. That's never going to work. I'm asking people to pinpoint one game. Now, I know the games are going to turn out in big numbers, but if we can drive the numbers down on June 16th, that may send a message to the rest of Major League Baseball.
Can I ask you just about the one game boycott? I mean, why not a month? Why not the whole Pride Month? Why not a longer thing? Is one day really going to have that big of an impact? I get your point about boycotting the whole season, but is one day enough to make an impact?
Yes, it is, and I'll tell you why. I've been doing this for a long time. Tactics matter. If I see, for example, let's change the subject to anti-Catholic art, mm-hmm. okay? I've been dealing with that for a long time. Yeah. Let's say there's a particular museum in Seattle, and it's got 10 pieces of anti-Catholic art. And I'm going to tell people, I'm going to complain about all 10 of them. But there are different gradations about one is worse than the other. So what we do is we cherry pick. We choose the one that's the most indefensible, and we ask them to remove that particular one uh-huh. from a public place. Same thing here. Nobody can get anybody to just stop with the Dodgers. The Yankees, right. They just sold out over the weekend. They're playing the Yankees. I mean, frankly, I don't think that's a smart tactic. You might get people to say, okay, I'm a Dodger fan, et cetera, et cetera. I don't like what they're doing. If we can drive the numbers down on that particular day, because we know how many people right. have been going to Dodger games on previous Fridays, right. and I know the attendance record from last year on Pride Night, we could at least send a message to the rest of Major League Baseball, hey, fellas, this has gone too far. Even with the Bud Light, they didn't boycott all Anheuser-Busch products,
right.
did they?
No.
They chose one,
yep.
even though some of the others are getting hurt. I just think you run the risk of coming away with absolutely nothing if you choose a whole month, never mind a whole season.
Well, it's a good point. I think about the 16th, the day dedicated to the Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. If that stadium was half full or empty right. on that day, people stayed away, it would say, it sent a huge message. And
it would.
You could say, hey, if this continues, we're going to do it again. So I really appreciate it. What was the attendance of Pride Night last year? Do you know by any chance? I don't know if you
did. Yeah, it was over 52,000.
Wow. So what are we expecting this year? The same?
Well, listen, they had over 52,000 last weekend, but then again, it was the Dodgers and the Yankees, and that's an old rivalry as such. I have no idea. The Gays are going to probably pack the stadium the best they can with their people, but they did do over 52,000. We have the figures here last year, and we've been doing very well this year. So, listen, I'd like people, of course. I mean, in one sense, you're right, Drew. People should just simply boycott the Dodgers at this point until they pivot. Same thing with the Navy and what they've done, and Bud Light and Target and Adidas, and we can go right down the line. We are at a tipping point, though. See, I'm not entirely discouraged.
Good.
A lot of the people have been pushing. They pushed too far because now we know they're not looking for tolerance. They're looking for affirmation. They're looking for me to affirm something. Right. And when you ask people to affirm bigotry, I mean, that's just gone way, way too far.
Doctor, I want to thank you for, again, your vigilance. Like you said, you've been doing this at least 30 years. Grateful for all that you're doing. If people want to follow you or get connected, CatholicLeague.org. We'll look for those commercials, too, on KABC. That's fantastic. Keep up your good work, okay? And we'll continue to follow the story and follow what you're doing.
Thank you, and congratulations for your great work.
Thank you. It means a lot to me. It's Dr. Bill Donahue. He is the president and the CEO of the Catholic League for Religious and Civil Rights. Great organization. Check them out, okay? It's bottom of the hour. We're going to take a very short pause. When we come back, here's a very important conversation. How do you evangelize? And this is the key to this solution of what we're now talking about in a post-Christian society, because that's what we're living. We'll dive into that and more.
Trying to stay up on the headlines? The Drew Mariani Show is here for you. This is what you need to know on Relevant Radio. The Drew Mariani Show.
This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More information, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I heard it on the radio on my way back home.
Well, with all the things we've been talking about these last few weeks, especially with Dodgers and the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, so-called Pride Month and Target and Bud Light, and the list goes on, right? It's really easy, I think, to tell that we are living in a post-Christian society. And it's the beauty of Relevant Radio, and it's the beauty of institutions like some of these great institutions that are offering people an opportunity to have a well-formed mind, like the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. This is really what we need. I mean, we need truth proclaimed. We need it taught. It's our duty as Catholics to do the same thing, to educate our children. I'm at an age when I can remember a time when society probably would never have tolerated this kind of stuff going on. This is just so crazy. I look at the headlines in the morning sometimes. I'm like, what is going on? And almost no one could have ever dreamt about doing the things that we're doing and making them seem normal, right? So, you know, putting the picture of a man who claims he's a woman on a beer can, if it was done in mockery, you know, people would be upset about it. But to see what happened to Bud Light as a result of them having Dylan Mulvaney, champion their beer. I was watching TV last night and I saw a commercial. Now they're trying to, I guess, toughen up their image again. They had Bud Light ran an ad with Harley Davidson. You know, I only caught the very tail end of it. I don't know whether they're putting Harley Davidson on the cans, but they're trying to once again get that image back to their target market. But there's been a real rejection of all things that are, I don't know, that are Christian, really, in some respects. I mean, the dignity of the human person, the beauty of marriage, you know, of our gender, of our sexuality. Of course, there are there's more to Christian society than just mere morals. And when those morals become corrupt, as we're seeing today, it's an indication that something's deeply wrong. So what do you do? How do we correct that? How do you evangelize your kids, your siblings, your spouse, when we're living in this post-Christian world, when everybody says this is fine, this is acceptable, let's just get along, let's just love is love, right? What about truth? How do you bring the teachings of Jesus Christ and the truth of our faith to those who have accepted a pagan ideology, right? And they're not alone. I mean, they're supported by this in the media, in the entertainment industry, from a lot of, you know, from schools and halls of academia. It's been 2,000 years of history between the time Christ was born and now, but those principles are timeless. And joined today by somebody who understands that and is here to help guide us and give us some perspective on how to Christianize, how to evangelize, perhaps is a better word, a post-Christian society. And it's a delight to have with me Monsignor James Shang, president of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. You can check them out, by the way, at cometomary.com or the other web address, pretty easy to remember, umary.edu. Monsignor, always good to have you here. Good afternoon.
Drew, it's always great to be with you too and all of our listeners.
Yeah, you know, the Venerable Fulton Sheen, you know, he once said that there are probably not 100 people in the United States who hate the Catholic Church, but there are a million who hate what they wrongly perceive the Catholic Church to be. And I think that's part of the problem we're facing right now. Overcoming that wrong perception is what makes evangelizing, very difficult today. The church with its scandal has made it difficult. A lot of people are now leaving the church as well. They're accepting this post-Christian ideology, if you will. How do we change that? How do we fight against the current of our day?
Yeah, well, the good news has to be preceded always by the bad news. And the bad news is that we are probably in one of the most difficult sets of circumstances that Christians have ever seen, because there's never been a post-Christian civilization before. You remember C.S. Lewis one time spoke about this. He said that when Christianity first broke onto the scene, you know, in the Greco-Roman world, in the pagan world, when Christianity first sort of was young and new, it won the heart of the empire over the course of 300 years of persecution. And it did it because it was so fresh. It was so new. And he said it was like a young maiden who was falling in love for the first time. That's what the first evangelization was like. It was like the wooing or the winning of the heart of a young maiden. Now, of course, it wasn't all romance. There was a lot of difficulty. There was a lot of blood spilled. Mm-hmm. But he said that our task now, and I think it's not just Louis, but all of the popes of the last 60 years have been talking about how difficult our task is now, primarily because we're in this post-Christian society, which isn't like a young maiden who's never fallen in love before. He said it's more like a cynical divorcee and trying to win that person back to the previous marriage. In other words, the people of the modern world believe that they've heard everything that they need to hear about the gospel, yeah, that they know everything that they need to know about the church, and that they want nothing to do with it. This is a moment in history in which there are certain moments in history. This is, you can see this in the Aparecida document of the South American bishops, which Jorge Mario Bergoglio, who's now Pope Francis, was one of the primary authors of. The bishop said, we don't live in an age of change. We live in a change of the ages. Meaning, Drew, that there are some moments in human history when you can draw a bright line between everything that went before and everything that's coming after. And we live in such a moment, a change of the ages, in which the fundamental worldview, the fundamental imaginative vision at the basis of the culture has gone from being informed by Christian principles and informed by the principles of the gospel, even if they were asleep in the majority of hearts. The Christian faith was at the very basis of our civilization, and now a very different vision of the world, a very different imaginative vision, a very different worldview is the basic, resting, central presupposition in most hearts and minds. And so I think that we live in a time in which evangelization is much complicated by that. This is all a long way of saying this. We can make a fatal error. We can try to preach the gospel as though we're talking to people in the 1950s or 1940s. And if we do that, if we try and evangelize according to the old methods, we're not going to get a hearing. And in fact, people will simply write us off. That's not the way to evangelize in the world in which we live.
My guest today, Monsignor James Shea. If you want to join us, feel free to. The number is 888-914-9149. Jim wants to sound off. Monsignor, I'll let you respond to him. He's in Orland Park, Illinois. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
How are you, Drew and guest? You know, I think, unfortunately, I think this is the end of our Catholic society is being drowned out and drummed out by the liberals. And the only way I can keep my head about me and not be so depressed about it is every morning I go to adoration before Mass and I pray to God. And the only thing that I've come from out of my adoration is knowing that the truth is there hanging on the cross. And that's the only truth. And if we don't follow our Lord and our whole country change 180 degrees, I'm afraid for what really is going to happen, because it's not if it's going to change, it's when it's going to change to be worse. It's going to be worse if we don't radically teach our children and our grandchildren that this is the end of our Christianity if we don't do something about this.
Hey, Jim, thank you for the comments. I only have a moment or two before I take a break. I want to take a few more calls here, too, but Monsignor, I'll let you respond to him. I'm a man of great hope. I think good always conquers evil. We're going to somehow get through this. But, you know, you heard Jim's perspective, and he sees these as very dire times.
Sure. Well, first of all, Jim is doing the right thing. He's going to adoration. He's staying close to Jesus, who's hanging upon the cross. And he's suffering with Jesus as well. We need to stay close to the Lord in the midst of these difficult times. And then I think I join you in terms of being a person of great hope. God has tremendous surprises waiting for us, but we have to be faithful and we have to form our own minds and hearts according to the gospel so that we can have the same effervescent faith that the early apostles had when they were evangelizing a non-Christian world. Yeah. That's the same thing that we're meant to do today. We're entering into a new apostolic age, and that's tremendously exciting, even though it carries with it great danger.
Monsignor, I got to take a quick pause. Teresa and Monrovia, you're on deck. I'll take a few more calls on the other side, too, if you want to sound off. Feel free to do that. Taking a look today at evangelizing in a post-Christian society. How do we do that? We seem outgunned and outnumbered, and you see the tide waters rising, those tides of the culture. But as Monsignor points out, you know, we will prevail. We'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more right after this. Hey, looking for a new job? How about one that offers opportunities for spiritual, social, and charitable growth? Our sponsor, Catholic Order of Foresters, is hiring new agents today. Visit relevantradio.com/forester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy, live, coming up. You're listening to The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, thanks for joining me. It is it's a real delight to be here with you today. I'm grateful for your time. I'm joined by Monsignor James Shang, a very gifted, prolific writer. He has explored the post-Christian era and belief in the invisible world and the church's mission. There was a great interview that he had done. I think it was the National Catholic Register. We'll try to find that and post it for you. He is, of course, the president of the University of Mary in Bismarck, North Dakota. And if you want a great education, a great cause, I'll put a plug in for them. You want a well-formed, you know, young adult, then send them to this institution. You will not be disappointed at all. We're talking right now about, Monsignor, I've been talking for weeks really about the culture and what we're getting into, and I'll have these conversations with my producers in the morning. I don't want to curse the darkness. I want to give hope, right? I want to light a candle. One candle can pierce the darkness, but 1,000 can banish it. And so often we have to talk about the darkness that's out there, the culture wars and all the things that are happening. And I just listened to our last caller, and you know, there was some pessimism there, but there are some things that we can do. Let's go right to the phones. We can talk a little bit more, too. If you want to get in, I only have a few moments with Monsignor. The number is 888-914-914. Now, before I grab Teresa, let me just ask you very quickly, you know, John Paul II, he lived through a dark century. I mean, that 20th century was brutal, the horrors that he saw. And yet he foresaw a new springtime in the church. What did John Paul leave us? What kind of wisdom did this saint ultimately or what lessons did he impart? What footprints can we follow that John Paul set forth?
Well, you know, I think that when he analyzed the 20th century, which he had come of age in the midst of, he didn't see it as many think history will remember the 20th century as a violent, violent time. It was violent for sure. Mm-hmm. He remembered it as a great time of fear, which is why he always repeated to us, don't be afraid. From the very first moment he appeared on that loggia on St. Peter's Basilica front facade in 1978 when he was elected, do not be afraid. Of course, he's quoting the Lord here. Jesus himself came to be the light in the midst of the darkness. And that gives us a kind of unshakable confidence, an unshakable confidence in God and the power of God to overcome darkness. This is a time in which, you know, as we've been commenting on, in the culture, the movement of the enemy is very dark and it's stealth, and yet it's having deep impact. But that's nothing compared to the power of God in divine mercy. And I know we have the Divine Mercy Chaplet coming up very soon. His great wisdom to us is that we didn't have any reason to be afraid, but we could bring to bear all of the truth of the gospel and of the Catholic faith upon a world desperately in need. Because what you can bet for sure, Drew, is that though all of these bad ideas are out there in the culture, they're not making people any happier. They're not bringing peace and fulfillment and a sense of purpose and well-being. Instead, they're bringing deep depression, anxiety, mental health issues, difficulty coping with life, sadness, sorrow, devastation. And our faith brings the truth of the human person. And so in the darkness, that's when Christians are meant to show up. These are the times in which saints are made, and that's the opportunity for us.
Therese in Monrovia, California, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Monsignor James Shea.
Hello, Monsignor and Drew. Many times in the Bible I've read where there are areas where it is said that God has hardened people's hearts. And I'm wondering if situations like the situation we're having right now with the Dodgers and other examples, is it a case where God has hardened our hearts, or is it a case of free will?
Well, Therese, you know, God is Jesus. When you read the Gospels, you notice how he's moving through the world. And when he's preaching, he's testing hearts. And so when people hear the preaching of Jesus and willfully turn away, it's not simply to be understood in a crude way that God sort of got inside of their hearts and made their hearts invincible against the truth. It's rather that God is looking all the time for those who are willing to hear and to receive the truth about him, about the world, about who they are. And so the Lord is 100% 100% successful in his preaching, because his preaching and the truth always rightly tests hearts and reveals what's going on behind the scenes. And so it seems to me that situations like these difficult cultural issues show the importance of being faithful, even in the midst of difficulty, and show the deep need. It helps us to pray, doesn't it? Because it allows us to direct our prayer to those who are most in need and most in the dark.
Therese, great question. Thank you for your call. Thank you for your patience. I want to go to Sharon next. She's in Narragansett, Rhode Island. Good afternoon, Sharon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well.
I didn't have a question. I had more of a comment for Monsignor, and I might have missed some of the conversation when I was calling in. But I just wanted to say, I just felt like I had to comment because I'm currently in a program studying Pope John Paul II's teachings of the theology of the body.
Oh, yeah.
And one of my courses was on the new evangelization. And, you know, what we intensely discussed and prayed and learned and talked about was, I think in order to evangelize, I think it's more, you know, we can learn with our head, but we ourselves have to be on fire with the Spirit. And we have to touch hearts. And I just feel that that's the key. And that's what's going to open our hearts to Christ and his love. And it's just been a beautiful teaching. And I just love Pope John Paul too. So I just wanted to comment on that.
Thanks, Sharon.
Sharon, what a great comment. Because, of course, he was very good at that, wasn't he? As he was the most traveled pope in history, he went all around and people saw how much he was in love with Christ, how much he was in love with the church. And as a result, he was a very powerful and a potent witness. We're meant to be that too. When people who are so weary and worn down by the darkness of this world look at us, people who, as Therese was saying earlier, who might have hardened hearts and who might not be able to open their hearts and their minds to grace very easily, when they see the joy with which we live, even in the midst of darkness, even in the midst sometimes of personal suffering, when they witness our joy and our sense of confidence in Christ, which was what John Paul II, whom I met several times as a seminarian in Rome, what he just exuded. Every person who heard him speak, every person who saw him on television or saw him at a great rally or a mass, knew that he was deeply in love with the Lord, and that love made him fearless. And so I think that that is a key component to the new evangelization, to make the faith contagious by the profound joy that people experience when they meet us, because we have the truth of Christ deep in our hearts and operative. We're living according to faith.
Would you say we live in a new apostolic age?
I would absolutely say that, Drew. Thank you. Yes, we live in a new apostolic age. There are some ways, as I said before, in which it's more complex than the first apostolic age, but definitely we're living in a new apostolic time. And if we don't get that, if we think that we're still living in what we would call Christendom is a set of circumstances in which the civilization is deeply grounded in Christian wisdom, and in which the imaginative vision of the majority of people is rooted in the gospel, if we think we're still living in Christendom and we're trying to evangelize in that set of circumstances, we will have a catastrophic failure. No, we're in a new apostolic age, which requires new strategies and new ways of doing things.
I often think about that. You know, we are all chosen to live at this particular moment in history. And the whole civilization, the culture, it really has become mission territory. And we're all missionaries, right? That's the great commission. We're called to go out and to make disciples of all nations. I mean, this is a special time. And I think as evil rises, grace abounds all the more. These are exciting times to be alive. And the Eucharistic revival's coming up. I really hope that ignites a greater fire in the hearts of the faithful and really brings about a transformation in the country. How do you think that's going to play a role in the months ahead? Because we are, I guess next July, they have that Congress. We're in year two of that right now. And I don't hear a whole lot of, you know, dialogue about it. There's some, but I only have about 30 seconds. I hear that bumper running. You can just give me a final thought.
It will be terrifically important for us to deepen respect and love for the Eucharist. The Eucharist becomes a linchpin of this new evangelization in the apostolic age, and we're going
to
do it.
Amen. I'm with you. We'll talk more about it in the future. Monsignor, thank you. Great to have you with me today.
It's Monsignor
James Shea, the Chaplain of Divine Mercy, is straight ahead.